WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. With two wildfires burning in Shenandoah National Park, the National Weather Service issues a red flag fire warning. Jeff Shapiro discusses the week in politics and state government, including reaction to the shocking murder-suicide of a once-promising politician and his wife. And we wrap up our series on the redistricting proposal with a Republican and a Democrat both running in Northern Virginia. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 17th. The National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning due to critical fire conditions in parts of the Shenandoah Valley. The news leader reports that two wildfires have developed this week in Shenandoah National Park at Swift Run, just east of Elkton, and at Double Top Access, west of Madison. The red flag warning is for areas of the Valley and the Blue Ridge, including Augusta and Rockingham counties. A red flag warning means that critical fire weather conditions are either occurring now or will occur shortly. A combination of strong winds, low relative humidity, and warm temperatures can contribute to extreme fire behavior. Today's forecast calls for temperatures in the 80s with dry conditions and calm wind. Rain is possible Sunday. People across Virginia are expressing shock and grief over the murder-suicide Thursday that killed former Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax and his wife, Dr. Serena Wanzer Fairfax. Radio IQ's Michael Pope has the story.
Justin Fairfax was viewed as a rising star in the Democratic Party until 2019, when allegations of sexual assault derailed his career in politics. In a rare speech on the Senate floor, he denied the allegations and noted how they came on the 400th anniversary of the General Assembly that was also the 400th anniversary of the first enslaved people arriving in Virginia.
And those are the two strands that have run through the veins of the Commonwealth of Virginia and through this nation for those four centuries. And those are the two demons that we have had to battle.
Now, people who knew Justin Fairfax and worked with him are in shock, trying to process how the man they knew could have done this. Here's Senator Mark Warner speaking to reporters at the Capitol.
You never know what's going on in any family, but I was just talking with Tim Kaine. We were both shocked. I mean, I heard from Bobby Scott this morning about this unexpected shock. And for an awful lot of us that worked with Justin, he was an enormous talent. And I just can't imagine what his family's going through.
In a written statement, Governor Abigail Spanberger says this tragedy reminds us that domestic violence can occur in any family and in any place. Michael Pope.
If you or someone you know is in crisis and need help, the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available by calling or texting 988. A new study from the University of Virginia finds that Black residents are more likely to die from extreme temperatures than their white counterparts. WHRO's Catherine Hafner has the details.
Researchers analyzed weather-related deaths in Virginia between 2005 and 2020. UVA nursing professor Pam DeGuzman says they saw a clear pattern.
In both cases, at both heat and cold extremes, the likelihood of Black people dying was higher than the likelihood of white people dying.
The disparity was especially pronounced with cold weather, with Black people facing more than three times the risk when temperatures dropped to the low teens. DeGuzman says housing likely plays a big role. Black Virginians are more likely to live in neighborhoods that were historically neglected, including their heating and cooling systems.
The HVAC systems aren't as up to date. They're not as efficient, so they're more costly to run, or maybe things are broken and they can't afford to get it fixed.
The study doesn't include other racial groups because of limited data.
Catherine Hafner reporting. Early voting ends tomorrow, Saturday, for a statewide referendum over proposed congressional district maps in Virginia. Election day is Tuesday. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee spoke with eight candidates for the House about the redistricting effort, and this report is the fourth and final installment in the series.
Virginia Democrats are hoping to redraw congressional district lines to flip four seats blue in the midterms this year. One of their strategies to achieve this is by having five districts stretched to the blue stronghold of Northern Virginia, from as far as 160 miles away. WMRA spoke with two candidates and veterans from Northern Virginia, Tony Sabio and Representative Eugene Vindman. Tony Sabio of Woodbridge served in the Navy, Secret Service, and Central Intelligence Agency's Global Response Staff, then went into security in the private sector. Sabio is vying for the Republican nomination in the 8th District, where six-term Democratic incumbent Don Beyer has consistently won re-election with over 70% of the vote.
I run a big tent party. I am conservative, but I do truly believe that there's a lot to unite us. There's a lot of division out there right now, and once we could focus on the humanity of trying to work together to get things right, it goes a long way. I grew up in California, so I grew up understanding a lot of the more Democratic mindset of things. My views are my independent views. Do I support the current administration with a lot of initiatives? Yes, I do. Is there things that I don't support? I think we could do a lot better. Completely.
If the proposed maps are implemented, Sabio would stay in the 8th District, which would shift from a compact district composed of Alexandria, Falls Church, Arlington County, and part of Fairfax, to one reaching most of the way down the Virginia Peninsula.
It's going to be hard to actually service all those districts within. I'm not a proponent for the redistricting, but it is what's on the ballot, and hopefully the votes go in the way of voting no for this particular initiative. But if it does happen, we are in here for the long haul. We've already developed a strong base going all the way down towards Norfolk area, so we are ready to go.
His policy priorities include growing Northern Virginia's job market independent of the federal government, promoting electricity generation from small nuclear reactors, and supporting immigration reform, such as the Dignidad or Dignity Act.
Let's make sure that we know who's coming into the country. Criminals need to be gone off the streets. And then second to that, we have good, hardworking people that's been here. Now, you know, what do we do with some of these folks that have been here and they came over because of our neglect on the border? The Dignity Act gives them a pathway to be able to work here. They come out of shadows.
Hailing from nearby Dale City, Democratic incumbent Eugene Vindman is running for his second term in the House. Vindman's family came to the U.S. from Soviet Ukraine when he was a child, and he went on to serve in the Army for 25 years, retiring at the rank of colonel. Vindman currently represents the 7th District, which includes part of Northern Virginia and Fredericksburg, west to the center of Skyline Drive. If the lines are redrawn, he'd be moved into the new 1st District, a curving stripe from Fairfax down to King William County.
So I don't think it changes my perspective on how I perform my duties. You know, I lose some of the beautiful parts of my district, which, you know, I regret. I enjoy going out to Culpeper, Orange, Green, and Madison. But the work, for the most part, will not change. I've got currently, and I will retain for the most part, you know, three military installations, nearly 20,000 active duty service members, 72,000 veterans. And so I intend to remain on the House Armed Services Committee.
He supports the redistricting effort and says the stakes are extremely high for Democrats to flip the House.
The president has started a redistricting, a gerrymandering war. If you characterize, like I do, the last 14 months of this administration as chaos, as cruelty, as corruption, then this is an opportunity to directly stand against that.
Within his current district, the Washington Post reported last year that internal Immigration and Customs Enforcement documents indicated that Stafford was targeted for a future detention center that could hold up to 10,000 beds. County leaders told WMRA they haven't been contacted by ICE about any such plans, and the Post wouldn't provide them with the source that mentioned Stafford County. The reporters wouldn't provide it to us either. An ICE public affairs specialist told WMRA via email that ICE is not considering that site. The proposed 1st District would include Hanover County, where residents and the Board of Supervisors opposed a Department of Homeland Security plan to convert a large warehouse into a detention processing facility, causing Canadian billionaire Jim Pattison to back out of selling the property. Vindman opposed both of these potential projects.
As a matter of national security, I can acknowledge that we needed improvements on our southern border. But deploying tens of thousands of federal agents on America's streets without due regard to Americans' constitutional rights is vast, vast overreach.
As of mid-April, more than a million early votes, representing 18% of the state's registered voters, have been cast in the referendum that could authorize redistricting this year, and thus add Virginia to the partisan line-drawing brawl. Election Day is April 21st. For WMRA News, I'm Randy Behage.
We have compiled this entire series with loads of links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. A popular majority vote for president is one step closer to reality after Governor Abigail Spanberger signed a bill to join an interstate compact with 17 other states in the District of Columbia. The Guardian reports that under the agreement called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, states would assign their presidential electors in the Electoral College to the winner of the nationwide popular vote, regardless of the results within the state. The compact takes effect when states representing a majority of electoral votes, 270 out of 538, pass the legislation and thus would determine the winner of the presidential contest. With Virginia, the compact now has 222 electors. Legislation has been introduced in enough states to reach the 270 elector threshold. Well, as we've reported, Governor Spanberger rewrote a bill to start legal recreational cannabis sales in Virginia. As Dean Mirshahi with partner station VPM News reports, the Democrats who worked on that bill are not happy.
After a five-year wait leading to a Democrat as governor, Virginia seemed ready to create a legal retail marketplace for recreational cannabis. But legislation to open a weed marketplace that lawmakers sent to Spanberger was not the one she sent back. She proposed waiting until July 2027 to start legal weed sales, 6 months after the proposed start date. She also added new criminal penalties that raise concerns. State Senator LaCherise Aird of Henrico County was one of the lawmakers who carried the legislation. She expected changes, but not like the one she saw.
There is no exaggeration when I say I was completely shell-shocked.
The legislature could reject Spanberger's version and send back the one it passed when they reconvene next week, but Aird called that a worst-case scenario.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Finally today, let's take a look at politics. A tragedy rocked Virginia's political establishment this week. While referendum voting and budget negotiations continue, politics analyst Jeff Shapiro and Michael Pope recap the week in politics and state government.
All right, a lot of news to get to this week, starting with the very tragic news of former Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax killing his wife, Dr. Serena Fairfax, and then killing himself. Jeff Shapiro, what's been the reaction to this horrible story?
Chris, a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of questions, a lot of concern from Democrats and Republicans. If there's been a defining feature of Justin Fairfax's career, certainly that there were numerous personal and professional struggles that seemed to flare in public. Fairfax, of course, the second black person elected statewide in Virginia. That was helped along by the 2007 anti-Trump tsunami. The other thing to note is that Mr. Fairfax had been hobbled as well by claims of sexual abuse. He denied these allegations and, of course, had suggested that they were the handiwork of his political foes, and they clearly went a long way towards undercutting Fairfax's candidacy for governor. He placed fourth last in the 2021 Democratic gubernatorial primary.
All right, difficult to pivot from that to other news, but next week is going to be a very significant week. Tuesday, there is the statewide referendum where voters will determine about this constitutional amendment on redistricting. Wednesday is a reconvened session in the General Assembly when lawmakers might actually end up rejecting some of the amendments proposed by the governor. And then Thursday is a budget special session when we don't even have a budget yet. So let's start with that Tuesday referendum vote. What are we expecting to happen?
This is the countdown to in-person voting in this anti-Trump gerrymandering referendum. Early voting, of course, began about 45 days ago. The freshest polling by State Navigate indicates that this redistricting should pass narrowly. I think one of the more important points that we've seen emphasized in the press in recent days, and that is the spectacular amounts of money that have been spent on this campaign, north of $90 million, and nearly all of it is dark money, secret money. That is money that can remain undisclosed, legally undisclosed.
So Wednesday is a reconvened session of the Virginia General Assembly, and it looks like lawmakers might actually be poised to reject some of the governor's key amendments on the marijuana marketplace and collective bargaining.
That's correct. Spanberger was sent 1,208 bills. She is seeking amendments to 180. It's quite a pile of legislation. On that weed bill, she wants to reduce the number of commercial dealers from 350 to 200 and delay any expansion until 2029, when her successor would be selected. As for that collective bargaining bill, she wants to delay the implementation for several years, actually until 2030, and create a gubernatorial board to oversee all of this. So the labor unions, including the teachers union, really steamed about the governor's changes.
And then this Thursday budget special session, Jeff Shapiro, Democrats have got a trifecta. They've got the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, but they cannot agree on a budget. What's the point of having the special session if they don't even have a document to vote on?
Well, it appears that there isn't going to be a document to vote on, to borrow your flourish. The continuing disagreement here is over those tax breaks for data centers. The Senate wants to do away with them to fill a big hole in the budget. The House and the governor want to stick with them, saying they are an important inducement to the IT industry in Virginia.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week.
Have a good weekend.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.